This is EdgeCases. I'm Andrew Pontius.
And I'm Wolf French.
And our topic this week is tuples.
Tuples, okay. And yes. You even know how to pronounce them correctly. Wow.
What, do some people pronounce them tuples? Really?
Yeah.
Horrible.
I think I might pronounce it tuples because, you know, one of these things where it's like you read words for a long time before you actually hear them. Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose. Well, you know, we do have our data argument, so. But in any case, I was thinking, you know, you did floats, so I'm gonna do doubles, right?
Okay.
So yeah. Okay. So there's some follow up, and so Wolf, why don't you go first?
Okay. I neglected to get this last week, so this is a bit of a correction. In an episode, I guess two episodes ago, something like that. It was. Look, he even includes a link here. So it's episode number 86, Andrew's blog roll in the past era. Blog role in the post-blog era. I didn't realize.
That's fine. Episode 86, we'll just... What?
I didn't realize it was a tongue twister type thing before I actually tried to pronounce it, but there you go.
For most people, I'm not sure it is.
We mentioned that episode that there was a thing where I was worried about Brent Simmons and his app, NetNewsWire, his app back then, and about how he's... I was worried that he... I wasn't worried, but I kind of got the impression that he almost wasn't loving his own app, and he was worried about people kind of buried under the read count, the unread counts, and all that. Mm-hmm. And so he did a blog response to our podcast.
Yeah, he kind of did. It was kind of a long thing. It was really neat.
Yep. It's entitled "Mark All as Read," and I'll link to it in the show notes. And the basic thrust of it is that yes, he was actually concerned about people actually kind of being buried under unread accounts and kind of, you know, turning RSS into a chore type stuff. And he just always suggested that you mark all as read when you feel like you're just getting overburied and all that. Which it kind of goes to, that's one of the nice things about Twitter is that you kind of, you know, you let go of the idea of reading every tweet and it just becomes this river that some of it will pass you by and that's okay. But he does say in the last part of it that, but it should be pointed out, contra Andrew and Wolf, that I love my app every single day, madly. So I'm sorry, Brent, that I led people to leave that you didn't love NetNewsWire for a period of time. Obviously, that's always loved it, as did we.
His love is unconditional.
There you go.
Yes. So my follow-up is to talk about, well, they introduced WWC 2014. And actually, so I don't have a ticket because I actually signed up for a ticket just to see what would happen. But
you
I didn't get
wow.
it.
Yeah, you lose some cred points right there.
Why do I lose some cred points?
Well, this is the cool kids don't even try to get on the bus.
I don't think that's what a lot of cool kids were saying. Oh, I didn't get one. In any case, what that meant was is that they finally pulled the trigger on the event that we knew that was coming, which is that they broke all of our links to the 2013 session videos, because we were using the links that were based on a generic WWDC site instead of links that were specific to 2013. Now, it turns out that apparently sometime back in October of 2013, that they actually introduced another way to get to those videos. It was never publicized. I'm not sure how they would have publicized it because they didn't really have like a blog to tell you. But they introduced a way so that the way that we got to our 2012, 2011, 2010 videos, where it included the date in the link, they actually introduced a way to get to the 2013 ones through that same kind of link. And now that link is, for example, for the accessibility session 202, it's, for example, developer.apple.com/videos/WWDC/2013/ID=202. And so that's kind of the pattern that you should be able to use for any WWDC video for any year forever. And apparently I could have changed all my links to that sometime in October of last year, but since I didn't know that it existed, I didn't do that. And so I only did it now once I knew that they were replacing the 2013 site with the new one. So I'm kind of annoyed at all this, right? Because they did, in fact, manage to do the right thing, but they did it in a way that was kind of the absolute wrong way to do it, which is that they didn't introduce it at the very beginning. So when I was originally trying to set these links, the first time I tried to set a link, of course, the 2013 format, the link with the date in it didn't work. So I just assumed it was never going to work until the beginning of the next WWDC. But it only worked a couple months afterwards. And again, they didn't tell us, so I couldn't do it, make it correct all along. So I did actually go back and change all of them, contrary to my policy of never changing anything. I wanted those links to work, so I did, and that was like 2 weeks ago that worked. So they all work now. I did test them, and there's like 8 to 10 links.
Okay.
Now, what I would want them to do is for 2014, for all of those generic links for just the WWDC site to go to redirect to a 2014 specific link for everything, so that you'd know that it was 2014 specific from then on. Now, they're not going to do that. They're just going to leave it in the general site for a year. But what I hope they do instead, what is more realistic to hope for, is that they'll at least make those year-specific links work from the beginning, from the get-go.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice?
This year. And then I can make the links future-proof from the very beginning. If they don't, I'm going to be very cross with them. They're going to hear from me.
We don't want that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, because they, of course, they pay a lot of attention to my desires. Okay, but that's the story there. Okay, so how I got started on this, how I decided to do tuples as my topic, was because at some point in the last week or two, I was writing a utility method that was kind of involved, and it required returning an object or returning some data,
mm-hmm.
and if there was a problem, there were one of two error conditions I wanted to signal, mm-hmm. going back to the clients, and there are two clients. And for these two clients, they also return an object. I think it's a different object,
mm-hmm.
data, and potentially an error that they were going to return. Now, for each of those clients, for each of those errors, for those clients, there was going to be an enum which would say, well, here's the kind of errors that it can return. And those enum values would go into the code property of the NS error that was being returned. And they were similar but different enough that, you know, you wouldn't want to combine them, at least in order if you want to keep some type safety going on there. So I wanted to make this utility method allow the clients to create their error codes and create their NS errors with the least amount of fuss. And so the first take on this was, okay, so you return an object, and then you return sort of the utility-specific error code, which only has two values in it, two values in the enum, through sort of the usual way you return error values, which is through a pointer to the value. Right, and it wouldn't be appointed to an NS error because I didn't want to have you create an NS error and then have to take it back apart and then put together another NS error. So it was just returning the error code.
Mm-hmm.
What I found was that having it return this error code and then having each of the clients have to say, well, if the error is this, then set my own error code to this thing. And if it's this other thing, then set my error code to this other thing. And having to declare the local variable for that error value, it was just kind of messy, verbose stuff. And I don't like having to cut and paste a lot of verbose code for a lot of clients. I wanted to minimize the amount of code that the clients had to do to make the stuff work. Bunch of bother, I think is the way I describe it in my notes. So take two was to do something a little weird, which you're probably not like, most people wouldn't like. But I said, well, there's only two error conditions. So why not have a block that gets called, like have the client pass in two blocks. And if it's the first error condition, it'll call the first block. And if it's the second error condition, it'll call the second block. And so that, you know, that doesn't scale for one, and it's not great. But it wound up that just having those two blocks where you could say, well, here's my error code, set that to foo for the one error and set it to bar for the other error, was absolutely the cleanest way, the densest way, the most readable way to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Single line for each one, no extra variables, no extra logic at all. And so what I tweeted about that about a week ago was, and I don't know if you remember this tweet, I said, you know, blocks aren't a great substitute for tuples, but they are a substitute for tuples sometimes. Actually, what I said was substitute or tuples because I forgot the F, but in any case, yes. So you know, this idea that tuples would have made my life easier in this case, but I couldn't use them, so I used blocks instead. And, you know, so that got me thinking, well, maybe I could talk about tuples for a little while. Now, if I wanted to make this episode about the definition of tuples, then it would be a very short episode, because of course tuples are extremely simple. Tuples are merely an ordered list. Okay, done. Wolf, do you want to grab some lunch?
Well, but Andrew, we already have NS array. What's the problem?
Right. So the language where I've used tuples is Python.
Mm-hmm.
I have not used them in any other language. And I haven't, what's the phrase? I haven't shipped anything in Python in anger.
Mm-hmm.
I have not shipped production code in Python, but I've used it enough on my own to have a pretty good sense of, well, to have sort of a bit more than a beginner's familiarity with it. So I'm going to describe tuples in terms of how Python does it. And we'll talk a little bit later about what other languages do. And so it is interesting to compare what Python does with tuples to what Coco does with NS Array.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Python, tuple is, the counterpart to tuple is a list.
Mm-hmm.
And so tuples, and they're both ordered, ordered lists, sequences.
Yeah.
There's a computer science-y definition of it. I'm not going to worry about that too much. But tuples are immutable, and lists are mutable.
Mm-hmm.
So in theory, tuples are equivalent to NS Array, and lists are equivalent to NS Mutable Array. But it's not that simple. So let's see. Because when you say mutable versus immutable, that's the only difference. You're ignoring how tuples are used. So mm-hmm. I'm going to talk a little bit about, actually quite a bit about how tuples are used, and the conventions around them. When you say tuples are immutable, so what does that mean? Well, you can't add items to them later.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't use them the way Coco tends to use mutable arrays, which is to add sort of variable content to it. You create a list of objects that is, you know, maybe 100 long or 200 long by going through a loop and, you know, adding them from another data source, from something mm-hmm. somewhere else. You add it from an XML, from a file system call, whatever else. So that's a thing where you have contents which you can't say, well, it's a specific set of contents. But when you're making an array, and you see this even in Objective-C, you can only create it at one time programmatically. And so one of the things that Objective-C does is it tends to say, all right, well, we'll, you know, create things with a mutable array and then copy it into an array, and then we'll use that array for things. But actually, it's even more than that, because more than doing that, what you tend to do is you create that mutable array by putting your variable content into it, and then you pass it on to all the places where you would use an array, because a mutable array can be used as an array everywhere. And that's really, I think, the big difference, because mutable array is, at least in theory, a subclass of NS Array. I suspect the real underlying implementation is quite a bit more complicated than that. But in any case, yes, so you basically create your mutable array, pass it along, use it everywhere. Whereas in Python, that's not, I don't believe you can just substitute one for the other like that.
Uh-huh.
So really in Python, they're thought of as much more as independent units. And they're used much more. So instead of saying, well, I'm just going to create a list and then use it as a tuple somewhere, you really mostly just use tuples as a series of fixed objects, and fixed types of objects in various places. And the idea that you use it like that leads to a lot of interesting patterns. So when I was creating my attempt at a backwards compatible system for the iOS 7 only image slicing functionality in our asset catalogs episode 82, I used a Python script to pull in the data that I needed from all of the JSON files that were in your project. So what I did was I read in all the JSON files, and then I took that information and spit it back out as a single JSON file that would then be read in by my specific code, to provide the same information at runtime that the iOS system, the System 7 code, did for us. Now, what's interesting about that is in your asset catalog folder, you have these .xcassets folders that have JSON files inside of them, that are in various places in the subtree of folders. They don't all have to be at the top level. You can have, you know, one folder that's contains another folder, and then that has an asset catalog thing in it. Or you can have one folder that contains the asset catalog right there. And so that means you can't just do a shallow traversal of the file system. You need to do a deep traversal. What do they call it? Deep enumeration. You need to go inside all of your subfolders and to do that. And so one reason I used Python was because Python makes that quite a bit easier than Objective-C, and we'll see why in a second. So I'm going to read to you a line from my script, and so I'll explain it It's going to be a little in-depth. I know, Wolf, you love it when I read code.
Should we get some theme music going on here? maybe Masterpiece Theater or something?
If you want to do that in Logic after we're done recording, you can go ahead and do that. I'm pretty sure you won't.
Okay. You are darn lucky I am unskilled at doing that.
Yeah, right. I believe I am, actually, yes. Okay, so there's asset dirs, which is a list variable, and we're going to assign to it. And there's source root dir, which is the path to the place, source root in your project, the place where you have all your functionality, all your files. So it's asset dirs equals, and then brackets around this whole thing that I'm going to talk about, x, it's the first element in x, or x, you know, open bracket, zero, close bracket, for x in os.walk paren, and then there's that source root dir variable, passing that into os.walk. If os.path.split x, and then parens again, the first element of x, and then that whole split x method, the result of that call, taking the second element of that, if that equals dot xcassets, which is a string. And again, all that's being assigned to asset dirs. So there's a lot of stuff to unpack in this. But we'll start with the OS calls, the Python system calls that we use during it. And the first one is os.walk. And I can put a link to the python.org docs if anybody's interested. But what's interesting about this is it takes the directory path, which is source root dir, and then it returns a list. And we're enumerating through that list in the for in loop. Each element in that list, however, instead of being like Cocoa would do, which would just return one object in that list, each one of those elements is a tuple.
Mm-hmm.
And that tuple consists of three objects. It consists of the directory path of the current place in the tree that you're at. And remember, this is a not a shallow enumeration, a deeper enumeration. So you might be at any point in the subtree there. And then the second element is the names of all the directories in that location.
Mm-hmm.
And the third element is the name of all the file names in that location. And so what I do is I said, remember the thing at the beginning of that, right before the for in, was take the first element of x. And so what I was doing there was saying, well, I only want the path name of that particular location. Okay, so we have that path name for each one of the iterations of looking through all those places in the source tree. But then, because it's Python, there's also a conditional at the end, which says os.path.splitx. And that returns a pair, another tuple, returns a pair, where it's the full path minus the extension, and then the extension. And so you only have that path in that particular place in the list going into that full list that gets returned back to asset dirs if the extension of that full path is equal to this XC assets name. Whew. So there's actually quite a bit of stuff going on in there, but mm-hmm. It's all in one line. And you know, again, the reason I did it in Python was so that I could do it that quickly and with that, you know, with that much readability, with that much convenience. Now, that thing where it's you're looping through the thing and you get a conditional and then you get a list back out of it, it's called a list comprehension. Now, we're going to talk about the equivalent Cocoa methods that you would use for this, just to give you a compare and contrast here. And these are methods on NS File Manager. Now, the first one that you would tend to look at as a Cocoa programmer would be contents of directory at URL. Now, let's set aside for a moment the fact that the idiocy of using URLs for file references. see if we get any mail about that. But the results of this, contents of directory at URL, colon, including properties for keys, colon, options, colon, error, returns an array in the same way that the os.walk returns an array. But because there's no tradition of using tuples, each element of that array is merely the URL of the shallow traversal of that directory.
Mm-hmm.
And so that doesn't really help you very much, but that's the thing that I think most people would tend to do with this, at least at first blush, the first thing that they would try. And so what you would need to do then is you take that array and then do some sub groups of that array to go down to each one and go to each path. And you may need a reentrant helper method to do that and all this other stuff. And it, you know, it gets kind of busy. Now you can use a separate method. Like when I looked at that method, it said, well, that's a shallow enumeration. If you want a deep enumeration, you should use this other method. Enumerator at URL, colon, including properties for keys, colon, options, colon, error handler, colon. Have you used this method, Wolf?
I'm trying to remember. It was introduced like in 10.5 or something like that.
Oh, I don't have that information with me.
But I don't think I've used Anger, you know. I've used older techniques.
Right. So this returns an enumerator object. So, and I'm not quite sure why it doesn't introduce a return a list. I'm sure there's a reason, and if I thought about more, I would get that. But in any case, it returns an enumerator, and then you iterate through that enumerator yourself. And that enumerator, let's see, there's a couple of things that does. Now, in this case, for this method, when it returns this NS directory enumerator class, all that enumerator gives you back is that URL for that location. Mm-hmm. And remember, it's a directory enumerator. So unlike the Python version, it doesn't give you back the files at all. If you want the files, you've got to make a separate call yourself to do that. But one thing that you can do is there is a skip descendants method on this, which if you call it on the enumerator for a particular location, that means that it will not descend down into all the subdirectories of that directory. It will go directly. Is that confusing? It will go to the next sibling, same level directory there. And that's actually kind of funny. There's skip descendants both with an ending E and with an ending A. And the only...
Oh, I was just looking at that. I was trying to figure out what the heck.
The only comment for the, I think the A version is this method is spelled correctly. So somebody got all testy about the fact that you spelled descendants wrong. And it goes... So, but just to use all of this is tremendously more verbose in sure. Cocoa than it is in Python. So the Objective-C version has more options. It can give you the properties for a file. Now, my original comment here was that it has more error handling. It turns out that there are actually other parameters to that os.walk method that are optional. So mm-hmm. you can actually give it a function in the same way that you give it a block to the Cocoa version that can let you do things like say, all right, I want to stop iterating through this. So they both have kind of that option. But the Python version does not have this sense that you could stop iterating through the rest of it. And the reason I think it doesn't have that is because it's giving you this entire thing as one big list. And that's just much easier to use, but it's less performance mindful.
Mm-hmm.
I think is one way to look at this, because when you're writing in Objective-C, it's a C-based language, it's compiled down, and you might be more worried about whether you're taking up a little bit too much time, a little too much energy, going down all these paths that you don't need to. Whereas with Python as a scripting language, I think there's less of that concern. But one of the reasons why they go through all these extra steps in Objective-C is because you can't providing that information in a concise fashion is more difficult in Objective-C, and it's not the way you would normally do it. So with Objective-C, they're using the data types that they have. They're using arrays, they're using iterators, enumerators to handle these things. Whereas Python just says, well, hey, here's all these things. I can just gradually, conveniently package them all up in this one array or one list. Now, that doesn't give you the full sense of what's interesting about this, what's good about tuples, because you could hear when I said it, you could see, because you're not reading the same thing I am, that I had a lot of places in that where I said, well, take the first element or take the second element. And that can be hard to read, sort of thing. Now, in the Python documentation for all this stuff, they do clearly document what all the tuples are, what the specific elements of each tuple are. But, you know, who reads documentation? So the second pattern for this, now it's not the pattern I use because I was using this, what's called a list comprehension for this, but if you're using a regular for loop and you wanted to go through this os.walk method again, you could say for and say root comma dirs comma files in os.walk and then the name of the thing you want to walk through. And what that does is that says I'm going to take that tuple and parse it out and put each element into those individual variables. And that's called tuple unpacking. Mm-hmm. And that is another way, and you're talking about how, well, why isn't this just arrays? If you wanted to do the same thing with an array in Objective-C, you'd have to have an array iteration variable in the for loop, and then you'd have to have all of these extra lines which say, you know, root equals, you know, array first element, dirs equals array second element, files equals array third element. That's, you know, that's annoying. That's verbose. That's not what you really want to do in your code all over and over and over again. And because they've got this tuple unpacking syntax, which does it for you very, very cleanly and very quickly, you know, that makes it much easier to use. And they use this all over. I've seen this all over in Python. Because mm-hmm. now you've got, you know, what you said before was, well, the first element of this array, well, that's very obtuse. I don't know what that means. Here, now all of the variables are named. And so you've got all this stuff very quickly out of the result of the method. And so that's tuple unpacking. Now, tuple packing is the reverse, where you say, and I will actually, so another example of, you know, even if you don't want to use a loop for this, you can just do this with a regular equals, regular assignment, where you say root comma dirs comma files equals my tuple, uh-huh. for example. And that's just one line. That's just a regular line. But again, it makes it very easy for you to get stuff out of it. And then the reverse is called tuple packing. My tuple equals root comma dirs comma files. I think normally you're supposed to put that in parens, but I'm not sure if that's actually required. So in any case, and very, very, I think, again, very... convenient, very readable. Now you can make a one element tuple if you want. It's called a singleton by saying paren root comma end paren. So that's how you know that it's not just root put in parens for the sake of, I don't know, separation or whatever. Mm-hmm. So there are singletons, you can singles, doubles, triples, all sorts of things. But again, most of the time you're going to want to have more than one element. Now I think I talked above about that split xed method and what it does. But I want to talk for a minute about how, again, that shows the different ways that Python thinks about things than Coco does. Because what they do, again, I think I mentioned it, was that it takes that full path and splits it up into the extension and the rest of it. But since Objective-C doesn't really have that concept of giving you back both elements at once in a tuple, you need to call two methods to do that. So there's, for NS string, you could say, all right, I want the path extension of a string, and I think you might be able to do that on an SURL at this point as well. But so that gets you the extension, but if you want the rest of it, you have to say string by deleting path extension, which you call two methods. And the same thing if you want the last path component, it's last path component to get that, and then string by deleting last path component. And that's incredibly verbose for something that you could have done with a tuple much, much more easily. Mm-hmm. So that's going through my example. I wanted to talk next about Coco error handling a bit and how you might be able to do that better with tuples, better living with tuples, right? So the standard Apple pattern for handling error conditions is a textbook case of not using tuples.
Exactly.
Because your method, your Objective-C method, by convention, by default, by the usual way of doing, well, it can only return one thing. And of course, that's the true with Python methods as well. But by saying, well, anything can return a tuple, you get people much more used to the idea, well, I'm returning two things instead of just one. So it returns one thing, like in my original example with my utility method. And so to get back an error object, in addition to that one thing, you have to have that pointer to a pointer parameter, usually mm-hmm. at the end. And I was just reading something that said that this pattern was introduced in 10.5, maybe? I'm not sure if that's quite true. So yeah, before that, there was at least the possibility that you could say, well, since there's no pattern, maybe I could throw an exception, maybe I could do this, maybe I could do that. But no, Apple said, nope, if you want to return an error, you got to do it at the end, you got to do it this way, if you want to follow our pattern. Now, I never really liked that pattern. Because for one, it means, you know, you've got to add, you know, error colon segments to all of your methods. That's verbose, mm-hmm. and that's annoying. It also means that if you have nested method calls, you now have to worry about the fact that what's an appropriate error from one level of APIs might not be the right for the next one. Mm-hmm. And I've actually never seen this done well. I've never seen widespread systems that said, okay, we're going to give you effortless transformation between the low-level error and what you need to do at the higher level and what you need to do at the higher level after that, and translate all of that into something that's a good error to be shown to the user. Now, remember, I'm the apps guy. I like to program apps, which means almost anytime you get an error, what I'm concerned about is what I show to the user, what I do for the user in response to that. And again, it's very difficult to pass things up in that way and to make that work. And we talked about errors in our seventh episode. Remember, if you look at the error, you will crash. No, I don't remember exactly what you were talking about. I think you might have talked about some of this stuff there. But in any case, if you want to go back and have a look, you can do that. And of course, I think we've talked about error handling in a bunch of other places as well. But so I don't like a lot of these aspects to it. But the most practical, the thing I wrestle with kind of every day about this is that the error object and the return object, because they're separate and because the error object is often, well, it is entirely, it's always optional. That's the pattern, right? You don't actually have to pass anything in. You can pass a nil instead of a pointer to an NS error pointer. That people don't tend to think of them as being linked. And the result of this is that oftentimes when you look at the return object for whether there's an error, and if it's an object, you know, nil means there's an error, or if you turn a Boolean, you know, no means that there's an error. It often doesn't mean that the error is actually filled in. So you can't rely on the fact that they're actually matching. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this. I've seen this in real-world code that, okay, hey, there's an error, but no, we're not going to tell you anything about it. Mm-hmm. And you can't rely on it being nil telling you that it doesn't have an error. Anyway, because of that whole Apple thing that you and I both know about and we've talked about before, which is that Apple's code in some of its methods may scribble on that error pointer even if it is successful. Mm-hmm. So you can't say, well, if error is nil, then we're successful. And so again, there's this sense that they're not really matched. They don't really work together very well. Now, if you replace that with, well, any method that could return an error returns you back a tuple. And the first thing in the tuple is the original content that you would have wanted to return. And the second thing is that error. And so you check if that error is nil as your way of checking whether there's an error condition. That would be, I think if the concept, if the pattern had grown up from Apple and if everyone had decided to accept it, to do that instead of saying, well, there's a Boolean or there's whatever else, that would have kept them much better matched. So that you would have less of this problem, less of this lazy pattern of people saying, well, there's an error, but I don't care to tell you what's really going on. And also because it wouldn't be optional to get an error. You get an error, whether you want one or not. I think, again, that would have made it, would have changed the way people think. Because the pattern, the way you write code day in and day out, the specific format of it does change how you think. And so that's what I would want. If I could have everything. Now, one of the problems here is you couldn't do that today even if you wanted to, because if you return an array, arrays can't have null elements. And actually, this is one of the things I meant to test about Python is I don't know if tuples can contain null elements. I think they can. I think you can return a nil pointer in there, but I'd have to try it. But in any case, you know, so there's technical problems with doing it. And of course, there's cultural problems with doing it. So that's really not going to happen. Which is unfortunate. Oh, and but if we could do it, that would also. You know, originally we talked about it as, you know, translating the NS error parameter and your content into a tuple with two objects, a double. But if you're using a tuple, you're not restricted to just using those two. You could have as many as you want. Mm-hmm. So this whole thing where people, oh, I need to return a dictionary. Or I need to return a custom object, which is just a holder for a couple of values. Mm-hmm. Or a struct. Now, remember when we used to pass structs around? Did you ever do much of this before Arc?
Oh, totally, yeah.
I didn't know. Of course, you can't do it anymore, but you can at least regret that you can't do it anymore, because it was very handy when you could just say, make a little struct and throw it back. Well, now you can't do that because you can't put object pointers in structs, because that's not something that Arc will know what to do with. So again, if we had tuples, we could, that would be much easier. But we don't. So, so I want to talk a little bit about other languages. So C++ has tuples? Of course it does, right? Because C++ is the kitchen sink of languages. And so tuples are a templatized type, unlike Python, where it's sort of much more dynamic. So you determine the signature of your tuple at compile time. So, you know, you say, well, the first one is a number, second one is a string, third one is a vector, I don't know. And so then that's built in to what you're doing, and it's known at both at runtime and at compile time. Now, you need a new class for that. You can't just use vectors, even if you wanted to. And do you know why, Wolf? Can you think of why?
No. You can't use vectors?
Well, you can't use vectors for this, because vectors are all the same type.
Oh, right.
Right, trick question. Right, because vectors are templatized on one type, and then everything has to be that type, unlike NSArray and like a bunch of other things.
Yeah.
So it has to be a new class. Now, there are two methods. There's one, make underscore tuple, which lets you, you know, make what you need from the several elements that you need to make it with. What's interesting is their version of tuple unpacking is a method called tie. And I don't know why they would call it tie, but... So what you say, let's see, std colon colon tie root comma dirs comma files, and that's all in parens, equals my tuple. And you might be thinking, well, how are they setting those things? They're not passing them in by pointer. Well, that's through the magic of C++ references. And are you familiar with C++ references?
I am. I've viewed a significant amount of trickery with them, but I still don't quite understand how they could pull that off. Because that seems to me like it needs to get that template information from the parameters that are being passed in, and not just from the generic reference that's being passed out.
Well, but it's a, I mean, under the hood, references are, they do use pointers in the C++ runtime.
But by definition, doesn't it need to? You know, now I think I can see how they're doing it, because they actually do know the type, because you're templatizing on the two types that you're given, and so you actually know what the types are, the references you're passing out. Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. So it's interesting. Now, I liked references when I used them. Maybe I was young and naive. It does make it, you know, it's less ugly code when you do it, but it does mean that when I'm scanning through this code now, I have to know in advance that this is something that gets changed. As opposed to with Objective-C or C, where you know it's something that gets changed because you're taking the address of it with it. But it's still, you know, it works. And so in theory, you could use these methods to have the same sort of programming patterns that you have in Python. And I'm sure somebody has done that, because there are all sorts of different patterns for C++. C++ is a multi-pattern language. I would be curious to see what that code looks like. But, you know, and I didn't do that. When I was doing, I think tuples are newer than my time with C++. And let's see, Java doesn't have tuples per se, but there is a javatuples.org website, which appears to want to provide a tuple library for you. Would you guess that C# has tuples or doesn't have tuples?
I would guess they do.
They do. The class is called tuple, uppercase T. So I'll put a link there. And C# tuples are also, like C++, templatized on the type. And Ruby does not appear to have tuples that I could see, which is actually kind of interesting, because I thought tuples would be more of a scripting language thing, more of a high-level dynamic language thing than a lower-level thing. But there you go. Now, to tie this back to the beginning, one of the ways I think that Objective-C compensates for the fact that it doesn't have these ways to really neatly and in a customized fashion provide multiple values in one context is by using blocks. Now, it was kind of a joke. My tweet was kind of a joke about that. But I do think that before we had blocks, we had to provide things back through these callback methods, which didn't provide arbitrary numbers of parameters. Mm-hmm. So we did use more of this whole thing of, you know, packing things into arrays. I know I did that. Or packing things into dictionaries or that sort of thing. But because with blocks you can connect local variables in your method with values that come back from the callback, you know, all in one scope, that reduces the need to have to pack things up and unpack things, which is good because blocks are a part of our culture. Unlike tuples, you know, we use blocks everywhere. So that really gives us a lot of, again, I think it does give us a lot of the same benefits, even though they're not the same thing, even though it results in very different code, such that I think if you wanted to translate Python code to Objective-C code or back again, it would be very difficult because it'd be doing the same work, but doing it in such a different way that you really just have to rethink how you're making the code work.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they are different worlds, and I do know that Apple is never going to really change their thing. So this is not really a call to arms. This is not a plea to Apple to, oh my God, give us tuples. This is kind of a tourist trip to tuples, right?
Okay.
And that's it. So, Wolf, tuple for your thoughts.
Did you premeditate that?
Maybe.
Okay, yeah, so I have a lot of thoughts.
more than two thoughts, yeah.
Okay. Oh, yes, more than two. We'll have to define a different type there. for arrays, so think about tuples in terms of this, like, oh, they're this, like, you know, they're immutable arrays. Instead, arrays tend to be that are filled with elements that are all the same, homogeneous sequences. So it's like, so you have an nth array of windows, you have an nth array of NS strings, you know, or NS dictionaries, you know, basically the idea is that often, I would say the common case is that all the things in an NS array all have the same type, all have the same class. Tuples, on the other hand, are basically for heterogeneous data structures that you don't want to have to go up and define in a custom class for. That's why it really shines for things like NSError, because if Objective-C did have tuples, and instead of passing back this NSArray, which could have, you know, that kind of implies like the elements are all the same. Now, obviously, at runtime, it can be heterogeneous, but the idea here is that you could pass it back, and it's like the idea of returning the NSArray as a return type. It's almost always an NSError plus something else. And that's where you get, whereas the heterogeneous data structure, instead of just a simple, you know, index by, just a access by index type thing. Along your point where you were talking about using blocks as a way kind of separating the code out as a poor man's tuples, as it were, you should feel in good company, because this is what Smalltalk does. Not so much that, but...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because if you look at how, like, Smalltalk has, like, the if statement is a message sent, and how that, you know, control right. structures are message sends. So the idea is that you send a message to the if true block. You send the if true message, and you pass it a block. And then it evaluates what it needs to value, and if it's true, then it executes the given block. So this entire idea of kind of using it as control structures type thing, you're in good company there. Another thing about Node.js, which has definitely settled down nowadays, but in the early days it's very much Wild West, and no one really knew what the best, quote unquote, best pattern was for handling errors. And so one of the patterns was to specify an error block and specify the non-error block. Now that's pretty much a sell down to where you just have a standard handler block where the first argument is always the error. The earlier Node days, this was definitely not hammered down, and it was up for grabs, so which one actually won out. And I think it actually has benefits. You have the where Node has ended up landing. I agree with you that if Objective-C had tuples, NS error ** probably never would have happened. We probably just would just return be using tuples to return things like a right. not like an animal. You definitely have you not been using JR error, because dude, you need to get up to speed. You're giving yourself away this episode.
I suppose I am.
In terms of your point where you talk about how different layers of the system, you've never seen it done very well with different layers of the system reporting errors to each other and having to do translations and such, I will give props to Apple that NS error has the concept of the underlying error. So that if you get an error and you realize, hey, it's in the POSIX domain, I want current you know, turn this into my own weird domain of errors. You can totally do that and express that in a rich way. I think underlying error was introduced after NS error was introduced, which I think was 10.4. I think that it came along for the ride with Core Data. But it was a little bit of later bolt-on, so I didn't catch it on the first go. But it got richer later on.
Is it one of the keys for the info dictionary?
Yes, user info, yes. Yeah, it's ghetto, but it works. another thing you should look at for the error handling in general is that Common Lisp has a pretty much, I would say, the gold standard in terms of error handling. And it's kind of off topic here, but I just say that Peter Seibel, I think that's how you say his last name, wrote this book that's available free online called Practical Common Lisp. And you don't have to read the entire book. all you got to read is one of the chapters, which is chapter 19, Beyond Exception Handling, Conditions and Restarts. And it describes a Common Lisp exception handling mechanism where essentially, you know, unwinding the stack to throw an exception throws away valuable information for the error that you're actually trying to deal with. So Common Lisp doesn't unwind the stack when you run into something. Instead, it detects a condition and it will call a condition handler that can actually even restart the code and do the right thing. Mm-hmm. So it's like totally the sane way to deal with this type of stuff. But unfortunately, it's quite uncommon. It's only in Common Lisp. And finally, I want to point out that NS File Manager, Enumerator, Add URL, Include Properties for Keys, Options, Error Handler was introduced in 10.6, not 10.5. So there you go.
Yes. The 10.5 example was what I had read was the time when Apple introduced the NS error pattern to begin with. Now, maybe that's wrong. Maybe it was earlier than that. I think
it came along with Core Data, which is 10.4, but I'm not going to measure this.
They didn't. It wasn't at the beginning of OS 10.
Right.
It was later than that. But it doesn't necessarily matter exactly when. So yeah. Okay, cool. Yes, I will endeavor to read the Common Lisp book, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And so if that's it, then we'll see you next time.